I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Mike Jezoshek. That's a mouthful, and looking at the spelling, it will trip your tongue. But Mike is the founder of TaxElm. That helps small business owners find out what tax cuts are available to them and helps them implement those strategies. So if you're in business, you want to listen. This is one of my biggest frustrations, is trying to figure out what tax cuts I should take, and I never learn them from my accountant. So he's also the author of the Small Business Tax Savings Handbook. He's a CPA and a host of the Small Business Tax Saving Podcast. And Mike's mission is to simplify tax strategy for entrepreneurs nationwide, helping them keep more of what they earn. Tell you what, it doesn't get better than that. Mike, welcome.
Craig, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's frustrating because I've never had a CPA, I've never had an accountant that's come to me and say, "Hey, Craig, I have some tax strategies I want to talk to you about."
Yeah, you know, I have a theory about why that is. You know, one theory is accountants always are overworked. So, you know, they're so busy doing day-to-day tax prep that they don't have time to think about those other things. And my other theory behind that is that accountants oftentimes are afraid to charge the value that they're bringing to people. And so the accountants think, well, this person's paying me for a tax return, so that means I probably should be doing tax planning for them, even though that's not in our contract, they haven't agreed to it or anything like that. But they feel like they should be offering it, but they aren't getting paid for it. Tax planning takes time. And so they ultimately just say, "I'm not going to do it because it takes too much time and I'm afraid to charge for it." That's just a theory that I have talking to accountants, is that, you know, why aren't we doing this? Why don't you work with your business owners like this? And that's often the case I have, is don't have enough time or I can't charge for it.
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, as an example, you know, I heard about the Augusta rule. And for those that don't know, that's where you can rent your house for up to 14 days a year, tax-free. You know, you don't have to pay tax on the revenues. And so I call my CPA and I say, "Hey, are you familiar with the Augusta rule?" And he's like, "Yeah." And I was like, "I want to use the Augusta rule." And next thing I know, I'm sitting there. The only thing he said, and, you know, I told him, I said, "Look, I'm using like VRBO listings, you know, for comps to figure out what it should be." And his only objection was, "You can't charge the 24-hour rate. You know, if you're holding a meeting at your house, you can't charge the 24-hour rate." I don't know if I fully agree with that, because I've done marketing strategies where I'll actually rent a VRBO home to do it, because I don't like doing them around conference tables.
Yep.
And so, but it was frustrating that I had to find out about the tax loophole and go to him with it.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing, Craig, too, is that a lot of accountants are afraid of their own shadow as well. So if you say Augusta rule to half the accountants out there, they're going to say, "No, that's baloney. That's, you know, that's a sure audit. We're not doing it." And then you start to dig into, you know, the way that you described it. "Oh, just rent it your home to your business 14 days and pay yourself a check for $5,000 a day. You're good to go." If that's the way you implemented that strategy, yeah, I get why an accountant would say, "We're not touching that." And there's people that do that. There's abuse to strategies every day. But that's not what we're talking about. You're saying, "No, I want to do it. I want to do it the right way. And now I just need your help, Mr. Accountant, Mr. and Mrs. Accountant. I need your help with these last final pieces to make sure that I'm dotting my I's and crossing my T's." And so that's another piece that I think is important as well.
Yeah. Well, and fortunately, there's a house literally two doors down. We're supposedly not supposed to have VRBOs in our neighborhood. The bylaws don't allow it. But they don't follow, you're also supposed not let your not supposed to not let your dog go poop in somebody else's yard, and they do that every day. But they had their house in. It's great. I have a comp. I'm not taking the full amount. I'm taking about one third of what they're charging for that. And I could probably do more, but I had to work it out with my accountant and find his comfort level. But the bottom line is, if I ever sit across the table from an auditor on that, and this is always my thinking, is I don't want to do anything that I couldn't explain to an auditor and feel confident in my answer. And I was just telling the auditor, I'm like, dude, one third, literally one third of what they're renting the place for two doors down. What's your complaint? I should have taken two thirds or the full amount?
Yeah, and that's a great concept to always have in your back pocket of if I were to explain this to an auditor, sitting across the table from an auditor, what would their thought be? Would they be like, "Yep, makes sense, you're good to go," or would they be like, "That's baloney, there's no way"? And I think that that's a good sniff test to do when you're implementing tax strategy. Picture yourself being against an auditor, and how are you going to defend this? And can you convince them? Now, whether you convince them or not, you likely won't even get audited, to be honest with you. But what that is a good sniff test to determine, where am I in that risk table? Because anything with tax comes with risk. But the thing with tax is that this stuff is in the law. The 14-day home rental rule, that is in the law for a reason. Now, the government didn't knock at your door, Craig. I'm sure you didn't find this out because the government knocked on your door and said, "Hey, I noticed you're not taking advantage of this tax strategy." That doesn't happen. So it's our responsibility as citizens to understand, okay, the government's giving us incentives in the tax law. There's a reason they do that, and it's our responsibility to understand them, but then not only understand them, but implement them and implement them correctly. Because you can take that 14-day home rental rule and abuse it and take something that is black and white legal in the tax code and make it illegal just from incorrect implementation. So I think that's the key to do that sniff test. And that gives you a list of kind of where are you on that risk table.
Well, and for me, I'm not a good enough poker player that if I was sitting across the table from an auditor and I knew I'd colored outside the lines, I think my body language would give me away. And so when I can go in with full confidence that, yeah, I did this, of course I did this. And and keeping there's a principle Buddy shared with me. He said, pigs get fat, hogs get slaughtered. I'm like, yeah, I'm being a pig, but I'm not being a hog. Go after them.
And that's really kind of been my mission, as we kind of talked about, is there are so many opportunities out there. And it's people are afraid, I think, sometimes to implement tax strategy because they feel like they're cheating the government. Why do they think like they're cheating the government? Because they're supposed to send that they thought that they were supposed to send the government $10,000, but they brought it down to $2,000. So they just thought they cheated the government out of $8,000. What they don't realize is the government only wanted the 2,000. They didn't want the 10. I mean, they'll take the 10, but they only wanted the 2 because they put strategies, they put law into place to allow you to get to the 2. But it's your responsibility to make that gap and create that implementation. Otherwise, you send the government 10, they're going to say thank you and move on to the next person. They're not going to come back and knock at you and say, "Hey, you forgot about this, or that." Unless it's something simple like a child tax credit or something like that, that the government will let you know about. But when it comes to being a business owner, the government oftentimes doesn't even know what's going on under the table. So your 14-day home rental rule, a good auditor could probably look at your tax return and understand what was going on or understand that you're utilizing that strategy, but it's not black and white to them exactly that you were using that strategy. They can just look at different forms and try to calculate and piece it together. But oftentimes they don't see under the table until they open up an audit, and that's when they start to see the details of what's going on, but they don't see it unless an audit's opened up.
So, what's the most salacious tax deduction that you've ever seen?
As an accountant, we get a lot of stuff thrown at us. And when I talk about tax strategies, I often split it into two pieces. We have what I call core tax strategies and then advanced tax strategies. Core strategies are strategies that everybody should implement to the fullest extent. And these are things that whether you're making $5,000 a year or $5 million a year, these are strategies that you can implement. So think of things like the Augusta rule, maybe a home office deduction, maybe utilizing travel, maybe doing an S corporation, all these different strategies. Those are what I call into core tax strategies. And then advanced tax strategies, these are going to be typically reserved for higher income earners, usually have some type of investment or legal structure or something that's involved with these types of strategies. But I get hit up probably once or twice a week by some promoter of some type of advanced tax strategy. And they go across the board. You know, some of it's just something that I know about. They're just packaging it in their own little title that sounds great and easy to promote, whatever it might be. But a lot of it's garbage too. When I look at a tax strategy or an attempt at a tax strategy, is someone came to me and they said, "Mike, I am going to take a deduction for all these suits that I bought because I'm gonna, but I wear them in on TV, or I wear them in a podcast interview, or I wear them sitting at my desk." And I said, "Well, you know, if you can wear them outside of work, it's not a tax deduction." And they said, "Well, I put my logo on it." And I said, "Okay, let's look at it." And the logo is like inside the suit coat on the way bottom. Inside, there's like a logo of their company on there. I said, "Well, it's a logoed piece of material, so this is a valid business deduction." And that's one of those ones where you got to do the sniff test. If you go to an auditor, sit across the table and say, "Well, auditor, here is my business suit that's a valid business deduction because I put a logo on it." They're going to look around. They're going to say, "I don't see the logo." He opens up his jacket. It's sitting there at the bottom. What's the auditor going to say to you? Not allowed. And so it's things like that that we talk about tax strategy. That's from like at a core. That's an easy to understand one. You can get so far in advance of some of these complex ones, but a lot of times it's just understanding where is the abuse happening. People might have heard of conservation easements from an advanced tax strategy standpoint, or people maybe have heard of captive insurance. And if you haven't, go Google both of those: captive insurance company, micro captive insurance company, and conservation easement. Both of them are going to bring up this dirt about how the IRS hates them, the IRS attacks them. It's really not, people shouldn't be doing them, but that's because they've been heavily, heavily abused. There's people that do both of those the right way and get good results from it, but it gets a bad rap because of abuse. And so what does that mean? It means that if I am going to go down one of those routes, which we shoot people, you know, we talk about people going into the captive insurance route and where the benefits from a liability protection standpoint is, where the benefits from that are, it just means that you have to be more diligent. You have to dot your I's stronger. You have to cross your T's a little bit better to make sure that you're doing it correctly because there's more scrutiny on it. And so that's when I talk about implementation. It's not just implementing a strategy, because that person with the suit coat, he implemented a strategy. He bought a piece of clothing and put a logo on it. He implemented the strategy, but it was incorrect implementation, which made that deduction not allowed because he didn't implement it the correct way.
Interesting.
Or if on the captive insurance side, as an example, there was people back in the day that you'd be in, you know, I'm in Wisconsin. You'd have a business in Wisconsin and you would get insurance for volcanic eruptions. There's no volcano in Wisconsin or anywhere close that you would ever need that type of insurance for. So it was a pure black and white tax play that was trying to abuse the tax law.
So you get bogged. How did they make money? How did this work out? They're buying insurance, so they're paying for something that will never happen to them.
But it was a company that they owned. So the insurance, it was an insurance company that they owned. So they were making up this premium that didn't even make sense as a valid insurance premium. They were paying it to a company they owned, which can be a valid deduction if you're doing it the right way. If you have, you know, somebody on the back end that's finding the right types of things that can be insured, premiums make sense, those types of things. But just kind of creating things that you know will never pay out. You know you would never ever want that type of insurance or need that type of insurance. That's kind of blatant abuse of the tax law.
Interesting. What's another wild deduction you've seen somebody take? Just weird and bizarre.
Weird and bizarre. I tend to, you know, it's funny because as an accountant, we hear a lot of different things, but the super bizarre ones, they don't tell us because they know what our answer is going to be. Of, can I do this? Can I do that? They know what the answer is going to be. You know, my filter when I talk to somebody about a tax planning, talk to somebody about a tax strategy is saying, I want people to take advantage of what's available to you, but I don't want anybody abusing a situation. So if we look at the 14-day Augusta rule, If we're going to utilize that type of strategy, we just got to do it right. And I think that you're being more than conservative in your approach to it by saying, okay, I'm going to find a comparable and I'm going to take a third of that. But there's also a situation that we read in the news of a company in California that was taking $360,000 in a 14-day home rental expense deduction. That's hard to fathom. Now, they might have had a house that was comparable to that, but was the events that were occurring, did it require that full house? You know, if they said, well, I'm having a board meeting every month, do you need a mansion on a hill to host a board meeting every single month? Or does a co-working space downtown LA work? That's maybe $1,000 a day for rental. So it's piecing together those types of things. And, you know, most of the wild and crazy stuff you find in the news, and that's what gets people so scared of tax strategy. They hear about this 14-day home rental case that went squash and ended up really, really bad for the taxpayer, and they think, well, the strategy's dead. No, abuse of that strategy is dead, and there's more of a heightened alert from the IRS potentially once they see these abuses start to pop up. But it doesn't mean that the tax law is dead until they change it. Which, if they change a tax law, to me, that's telling us that the government's okay with what was being done, and the only way to stop it is to change the law. And this is what happened with conservation easements. We kind of talked about that being one of those things. If you look up conservation easements, there's a lot of dirt on that. And a lot of people say, well, it's not legal. There's, you know, abuse to it, everything else. The only way that Congress was able to stop those from occurring was to change a law. And this happened a couple of years ago, where they changed a law where it made them even no longer valuable or even make sense to do anymore. But there was a law change that required. And so my defense against that is to say, okay, everyone that did it prior to that law change, this should be support to say that it is legal. And the government had to change the law to make it not legal anymore.
Yeah, interesting. So, what? I mean, and again, it's my frustration. I just think, as my, having a business, I have this general sense that there's a lot of tax strategies out there that I could take advantage of. I have no idea what they are. I have nowhere to look.
Yeah, and that's exactly what my mission is to say, from a small business owner, how do we make it apparent of what strategies are available to you, and then how do we help implement those? And so when we look at tax strategy, people say, well, why does tax strategy even become about? You're like, why, what is the tax strategy out there? And tax strategy is out there is because the government wants something. The government wants us to use it because they want something. The government wants affordable housing. So what do? They give incentives for people that build new housing that's affordable. The government wants its citizens to be employed by small businesses. They want small businesses to help employ their citizens, to help grow the economy. So what do? They give an incentive to people that open up small businesses, operate small businesses, to people that hire employees. And so those are sets of all out there. But you're right. Most people don't understand what's available to them because they don't get a knock on the door. There is no just kind of blueprint that they open up and they look online and say, here's my business. Tell me every tax strategy I should know about, because it's so nuanced based on your situation. You know, you might come in as a business coach and another business coach comes in the next day and they have completely different tax plans, completely different strategies that we're recommending them based on many different other factors. Do they have kids? Do they not have kids? Where do they live? How old are their kids? All those different factors can play into different types of tax strategies that we implement. And so this is a problem that I had as a business owner, is understanding what strategies are available to me, because before I even got into the tax world, I was a business owner and I was facing the same issue, large tax bills that I didn't like to pay. So it was a problem that I had. And then the second problem I had was, how do we implement those? Because if I hear about a tax strategy and I ask my accountant about it, more often than not, they're going to try to push me off the down the road. And that's something that we see quite often, is to say, how do I hire my kids in my business? And they say, well, it depends. I need to know this, this, and this. I hear that. I see a brick wall. I go the other way because it sounds like way too much work. But the cool thing about tax strategy is, if you implement tax strategies that are available to you, it guarantees results. You know, you could throw money at an advertising campaign and Google Ads this, Google Ads that, and I'm not saying don't do that, but you can do that. There's no guarantee that you're going to see increased business from that. You likely will, but there's no guarantee. But if I tell you, Craig, go hire your kids or go do the Augusta rule or go have a home office and go do strategy 1 through 10, I can guarantee that if you implement those, you will guaranteedly, I can guarantee the amount of tax savings that you're going to save. And so why not put an emphasis on that as a business owner?
So tell me about the home office. I'm kind of feeling like maybe I'm not taking advantage of something. I mean, I used to be able to deduct a certain amount of, I would have the square footage, but I think they eliminated that. What's the home office item that you're talking about?
Yeah, so when we take the home office deduction, and I really think that majority of business owners should have a home office. Even if you have office outside of your home, you have a regular office that you go into, you should have a home office deduction of some sort. But there's two methods for taking it. You have the simplified method, which is $5 a square feet, or the actual method where you're taking all of the, the mortgage interest, the property taxes, the cleaning, all utilities, all of that, and you're taking your percentage of that. So what is the home office square footage versus total home square footage? Take that percentage, say it's 10%, take 10% of all the costs. That's your business deduction for a home office. But a home office doesn't just stop there. And a lot of people say, well, that's a lot of work and it's not that big of a deduction. I typically see home office deduction being, at the high end, maybe a couple thousand dollars. Doesn't move the needle a ton, nothing too crazy. But what the home office deduction does is it opens up the door for now automobile deductions. Because typically, if you go, let's say you're a dentist, you have a home office and you have a secondary office. When you go from your home to your secondary, to your main office where you treat people at, when you go from your home to your main office, that's a commute. That is not deductible mileage. So that travel there, not deductible to you. But what if you start your day and end your day in your home office? And now you're going from a home office to your main office, back to your home office. Now you have office to office, that's deductible mileage. So by simply adding the home office deduction in there, we're potentially opening up the door for more mileage deduction, which wouldn't have been opened up without that small little bit of $3,000 home office deduction, which, not to mention, you still get a deduction for the home office, but it just opens up the door for those other things. So again, have to dot your I's, cross your T's. This has got to be a space that's used exclusively for business. If you have an outside office, you have to do majority of your administrative type work. Think answering emails, sending bills, invoices, bookkeeping, that type of stuff. You have to do it one at your home office. So just dotting your I's and cross your T's, but it just starts to open up the door for some of those opportunities.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I've been deducting, so I have a home office and I have a co-working space I go to. And if I'm going to the co-working space, so I have an app. I use the Mile IQ app and I just go in and there's a night line item, traveling between offices.
Yep. Yeah. And as long as you're taking the home office deduction, yeah, that's a business trip. But if you were not taking the home office deduction, that would not technically be considered a business trip because you're just commuting to your office. You're not going from one
How
office
do I
to
know if
another.
I'm taking the home office deduction?
Well, it would depend. If you file on a Schedule C, so think of sole proprietorship, single member LLC. If you file on a Schedule C, there's a home office line item that you could see right on that Schedule C at the bottom of the page one. If you file as an S corporation or something like that, which we see a lot of small business owners do, it's not going to be as obvious. It's going to be kind of hidden in, not hidden, but it's going to be deeper into the financials in some sort of way. And typically, I would say you would know because if you're an S corporation, in order to successfully and correctly take a home office deduction, you should have an accountable plan put in place. And that should be something that you worked with your accountant on. If you're not providing your accountant any type of information on utility bills, what were the total costs of that home? My guess would be you're probably really not taking the home office deduction, or they're just doing what I call Sally, same as last year. So taking, maybe you've been working with the same accountant for 10 years and they're just taking the same numbers from year one and doing that throughout the years, which, in theory is fine, but doesn't have support to back it up.
Yeah. Interesting. Now you have software that helps people do this. Tell me about the software.
Yeah, so when I used to own an accounting firm, digital accounting firm, started the podcast about 8 years ago and just really fell in love with teaching tax strategy at a mass level. And so sold the accounting firm, went full time into the podcast, and talking with business owners, again, when we talk about on our podcast, our goal is to not just be a fluff podcast, not just say, hey, this 14-day home rental rule is a great thing. Rent your home to your business, get a business deduction, and then stop there. Like, that's the 60-minute TikToks you see that people take advice and abuse it or turn it into something crazy. You know, my goal on our podcast is to say, every tax strategy, when you talk about tax strategy, a lot of accountants will say, I can't help you with that because it depends. And I need to know X, Y, and Z before I can help you with that. And what I realized in my research is that it does depend, that they're correct. Of course, everyone's situation is different. It depends. You do it differently. But when you talk about a tax strategy, it's 90% the same for everybody. So if we look at a strategy of hiring your kids as an example, 90% of that strategy is the exact same for everyone. What you need to do, how do you do it correctly, what documents you need on file is the same for everybody. Now, a plumber might hire their kids a little differently than a dentist. And so that's that 10% that you tweak. But as I started talking to small business owners, I kept hearing similar complaints of, I can never really get a hold of my accountant. Or when I do get a hold of my accountant, I don't really understand what they're saying. Or my accountant doesn't help me with tax strategy. Or if I find a tax strategy, I just don't know how to implement it. I just need to make sure I'm doing these things correctly. So I was kind of hearing these constant complaints and thinking to myself of, how do I know what the complaint is and build a solution that solves those? And that's where this idea of tax started from. And really our intention of TaxM is part of our software. You get unlimited access to our team of tax experts that answer within 24 hours. So we serve as that tax strategist that's there to help people around the clock. But the biggest piece of our software is to say, here's the information I have going on. Here's what's going on in my life. Help me understand what strategies I should be thinking about. So every user comes in, they fill out a questionnaire, formula, information that they have about themselves, and then it will spit out what we call a tax savings blueprint. And that's going to be every strategy based on their situation that they should be implementing. And then within each of those strategies, we have a full implementation module that tracks whether they start, finish, what kind of tax savings results from it, what were the estimated tax savings results from it. But they can log in, go into those implementation modules, and from start to finish, completely and accurately implement a tax strategy. And so that's our key, is to say, as a business owner, not only can we help you understand what strategies are available to you, but we're also going to make sure that you can fully and completely and accurately and correctly implement those strategies via our implementation modules. But then also, you have our team here. If you run into any roadblocks, hit questions, have any items that you need help with, our team here is here to help you along those ways. And so again, that is just a product of that conversation of talking with business owners of, what are your complaints? Why aren't you saving tax? Why aren't you implementing these tax strategies that you already maybe have heard about or know about or don't know about at all? Why aren't you saving taxes? And then we built a software behind it with the end in sight.
Well, that's cool. I'm going to have to check that out. Because I know I'm not taking the number of deductions I should.
Mm-hmm.
Mike, this has been awesome. How do people reach you?
Two main areas I can go. One is taxsavingspodcast.com. On there, we have our podcast information, blogs, content, free content, talking about tax strategies. Every week, we're talking and breaking down a new tax strategy, information in my book on there. And then TaxElm is TaxElm.com, and that's a direct link to our software.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for coming on Layers and Legacies.
Yeah, Craig, thanks for having me.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest. And sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.